news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Here we go. Friday has arrived. Hooray. It seems like it was like just Monday yesterday, so I don't know how in the world this has happened, but it's kind of like, I don't know, every week. This job's a lot different than my jobs in the past, but the week you go into Monday and you look at this, boy, there's a lot going to be happening this week, got to get ready, and next thing you know, it's Friday.
Yeah.
A lot has happened.
I was just thinking, Monday, we were saying, I wonder what that announcement, when he brings on the tariffs Wednesday in the Rose Garden, what will that look like? And now we see at least what the first 48 hours looks like.
It's the talk of the world.
It is, with the stock market problems, to say the least, after yesterday seeing big drop then. You have this morning another big drop, and it looks like the Dow down, if I'm looking at the right day, another 4% today. And NASDAQ down, verging on 6% right now for today.
Yeah, or already.
And then S&P coming up on 5%. And a big part of that, yesterday, even though the announcement had been made, still a lot of wait and see from investors. But then overnight, you have China, who came out and said, we're retaliating, 34% tariff on imports of U.S. products beginning next Thursday, April 10th. And that's a big reason why you're seeing the markets react the way they are today. Now, they did have a jobs report that came out during the last hour, 7:30 it dropped. And just from this one account here that took a look at it, because we haven't had the time, U.S. added 228,000 jobs in March, beating expectations. Unemployment steady at 4.2%. Strong hiring in health care, social assistance, and transportation. Wages up 3.8% year over year. Federal jobs dipped, of course. January.
Yeah, I guess they did.
And like they do so often, they did some revising. Also, with the March report out, they revised January and February's job numbers down. So a solid but mixed labor report, according to Econo Day, who took a look at this. So we'll see how the market reacts. Trump didn't seem too phased on Air Force One last night or on Truth Social yesterday morning, where he said the operation is over and the patient has survived.
Yeah, we'll get to some of that reaction. Trump, how he's reacting, or everything going on around him. You have, I believe, speaking of jobs, Health and Human Services RFK Jr. said some jobs are coming back that DOGE cut out. Mm. So he's bringing some of those people back. And, you know, people may be freaking out about that. They knew that was going to happen. I mean, we understand that they went in with a buzzsaw, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they cut out a lot of jobs. Some were going to come back, and that was even admitted on the front end. So
and
calm
then
down.
You had some high-profile firings yesterday.
Yeah, you did. I think people that weren't in step with Trump.
Yeah, so Laura Loomer, who is a certainly a firebrand, I'll say that. She fires people up one side or the other. And well-known in Florida political circles, but with the Trump team as well. So she's claiming it's because of her. She had this big meeting with Trump at the White House where she laid out some research on some people in his team that aren't all in, that are neocons, I think is how she framed them. And so I was wondering, actually, if Waltz would be part of this. You know, they were saying that Trump was kind of on the fence about letting Waltz go after that big signal screw-up, the national security advisor. But he stays on. The director of the National Security Agency, Air Force General Timothy Haugh, reportedly was, I don't know how to say that anymore. Because
I know, it's H-A-U-G-H.
So you have the kid from North Carolina, right, who's H-A-U-G-H, too. They call him Haugh. Or not North Carolina, but
Florida.
Florida.
Yeah.
So Timothy Haugh is how I would normally say it, but I don't know these days. Reportedly fired from his post as head of the agency. So his removal as director of the NSA comes on the same day at least three other White House National Security Council staffers were also shown the door. The ousted NSA director's civilian deputy, Wendy Noble, was also let go yesterday. Noble was reassigned to a role within the Pentagon's Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, and the real reason for the NSA shakeup currently unknown, according to U.S. officials, but Laura Loomer saying it had something to do with her coming to Trump and saying, here's your evidence that these people need to go.
Yeah,
and he felt strongly enough about it, he moved on it.
He acted on it, right. So we're going to get local here in just a minute. One other thought about all of this is it is amazing that with all of this attention, negative attention, I guess you would say for sure, that Trump is getting around him. It doesn't seem to be affecting him at all. Wall Street, you know, having a rough day and
rough 48 hours
rough
so 48 far.
Hours. And it doesn't seem to be taking him down at all, even though he's being highly criticized. And then got kind of under the radar, except he was on Brett Baer last night. That was pretty big news that you had this Russian diplomat on U.S. soil for the first time in years.
Yeah, at least since the war began.
Yeah.
And you had, what's his name, Kirill Dmitriev, who had been meeting semi-secretly. There were reports that a meeting was on the way. I don't think people knew they were meeting this week. He met with Witkoff on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
And what a couple days to be in D.C.
Amazing.
With
I mean,
the announcement.
That's what I'm saying. All of this converging all on top of itself. And Trump and his team seem to be able to handle it, you know, emotionally. But they're asking themselves to officiate and referee so many things. So you have these wars he's trying to end.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough.
Yeah.
You're right.
With other wars escalating, Israel now, and not that they haven't already made their presence known, but going further into Syria, you add that on to what's happening in Jordan and of course, the Gaza Strip.
And now you do the tariffs, and here comes China with all their vessels, and, you know, there's talk about what their next step might be, you know, in an intimidating fashion with Taiwan. These moves are inviting more
conflict
and things that need to be taken care of. What was it? Who was the billionaire that I was?
Ackman?
Yeah, Ackman also talking about getting back to the tariffs. He said the first ones that move on. It's like he is looking for a response, it seems. He's not your normal diplomatic head of state. He's looking for countries to respond to him. And then the deals, 180 of them, I guess, will be ironed out one at a time. Is that what you're seeing?
That seems to be the move, and to either have these other countries completely drop tariffs, but it sounds like that 10% floor is the 10% floor.
Yeah.
So I wonder if even some of these countries pull back on what they're charging American suppliers, whether anyone will drop below that 10%.
Right.
Because remember, Israel made a big show leading in that they were removing tariffs. And I don't know how true that was, if they removed all their tariffs on the U.S., but they were still on that chart when it came out to the Rose Garden the other day.
Oh, they were.
They were, yeah. So
and So Trump doesn't believe that they're there yet. That they made that announcement ahead of time, like on Monday or Tuesday of this week. They said, by the way, we won't be on that list because we're going to drop our tariffs.
And this is such a shift in the direction that we've been headed for so long economically. I mean, it completely shifts the way that the federal government receives income, right? Hopefully off the back of the taxpayer and onto these countries that are selling their goods here. Now, I say that realizing that it shows up in the cost of the things you buy at the store. But you also, you have so many people on the right and even the center who jumped over to vote for Trump. Well, the older folks now are way more hesitant to continue to back the Trump administration because so many of them have their fortunes wrapped up in the stock market. Not that younger folks don't do as well, but you have a longer runway for
like me
stocks to land if you're younger, right?
And yeah, so thanks for calling my savings a fortune.
I don't
fortunes.
Know
yeah, but you're right. I mean, when you get older, you look at the world a different way. You just do. And so this is a kind of a punch in the gut. And so, you just wait, how long is it going to be? When do we have to see things get better?
So many of the younger people, I'm saying 20 to 45 that backed Trump, still completely on board.
Mm-hmm.
And you start seeing some 50-year-old, 60-year-old folks, and they're like, I don't know about this whole thing. But that's kind of an interesting but still terrifying dynamic that's playing out right now.
Yeah.
We also have, and I think we have plenty of time this hour to get into the Mobile mayoral race, and had some news yesterday. Cherry Gattis really taking a pretty big jump in campaign funds as they build up those coffers for once it really becomes go time for the Mobile mayoral race. And I have that number around here somewhere, but he officially passed Connie Hudson. Here it is. By just over $6,700. In March, Cherry Gattis raised more than $384,000 with $155,000 in cash from 108 donors. nearly all in state. I think that 384 is his total. Yeah.
384?
It's his total campaign fund, 384,000. So in March, he pulled in 155,000 in cash. And they said nearly all of the donors were in state. Hudson, who had led overall until now, brought in $75,000 in March. Her total just over 377,000. And Jermaine Burrell surged to third in fundraising. He brought in not too shabby $66,413 for the month. Those were mostly from out-of-state donors.
He left. He left the city for a while. I know he went to Boston. Maybe some of that money's coming from there.
And a job in tech, I believe. IT, yeah. I think, is what he was doing.
I believe so.
And then came back. You also have State Representative Barbara Drummond, reported $57,000 for March. And former Police Chief Paul Prine entered the race with nearly $34,000. So that's kind of where the campaign funding stands now. But our plan on Mobile Mornings is to talk to each of the eight candidates. And we better get on it before we start to see names drop out. I don't know how far along that'll be. But
How about we circle next Friday as our first day we do that?
We'll get our first candidate on next Friday and try to do them week in and week out. But from the text line, if we can get some questions, and I'm talking, you could throw specific questions in there. I'll put them on the list. But questions that you think every candidate should and should be able to answer. We've already gotten several this morning on the Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106. Our first text this morning says, a question to ask Paul Prine is, how is he going to be able to bring crime down in Mobile? So that's a specific question, and I know why you'd want to ask Prine, and we will. But for everyone, I think that's a good question. How do you plan to bring crime down in Mobile? How is your plan different from the current administration?
Yeah, and we're going to podcast everything. You can compare and contrast during the interviews. Now, we've already had one, right? We've had Stephen Nodine on.
Yep.
And he actually spent most of that time, that might have been a Friday, but he spent most of that time talking about a little Doge action, actually, but he was talking about clearing things out that weren't spendthrift or they didn't make a lot of sense. It's really hard to do that in a city like Mobile. I'll just tell you, the infrastructure and the people that have been doing things the same way forever, the excuse you get if you're trying to get something changed, not easy. But Nodine was talking about that. You've also got, you mentioned Burrell, who's raising that money, and one other, Drummond came in more recently, and then who else is in it? Well, I guess we got them all. Burrell, Hudson, Chirigatis, Prine, Nodine. Oh, Batiste, Lawrence Batiste also has been in law enforcement his whole career.
Yeah, he has. And, of course, knows the city really well.
He does.
Some of the other questions that have come in. Pat, why does the mayor need almost $200,000 a year for their job when the median household income is $60,000? Pat said, seems a little off, but hey, I'm just a hayseed. Don, what are their plans to address sewer overflows into our estuaries during a heavy rain or tropical event? That's a good, really good question there. Backstrap Stacker had some questions specifically for Prine here and for Connie Hudson and several others that want to know how old Connie Hudson is. Let's see.
Ask a woman's age.
unless they're running for office. Jesse says, somebody asked these mayor candidates about South McGregor. What the hell is going on there? And we did get a little update on that this week through Lanyap, planning on wrapping that up by the end of the year.
So they're going to wrap that up. I might have all this wrong. They're going to wrap that up at the end of the year. And at the end of the year, we are also supposed to officially break ground on the Bayway, correct?
that's the word.
That's the plan.
That's what they're saying, is wrap up South McGregor and groundbreak.
The Bayway seems
break
like
ground.
It really seems like just a dream now.
Yeah. It does. Further away than it was a month ago.
Yeah.
Josh says, pretty deep question for the mayoral candidates. Their answers would be quite telling. If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? Now we're entering in like you're interviewing to work at Google territory. If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? But you're right. I think that is an important question for a mayor of Mobile because the trees are so important around here.
Well, I think it's a question that I may never ask.
And you got to go with Live Oak. You got to be
a
Live Oak.
Yeah, if you're Mobile, you're a Live Oak for sure. 821 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. And you guys got any plans for the weekend?
You asking me personally?
Yeah.
We have many birthday parties to go to.
Ah.
Several. So I'm not going to be having too much fun.
Parties are supposed to be all about fun. It's 8:22, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, 8:26. Crazy the amount of crime that is now in all over the city. Mm-hmm. All over the city.
Yeah.
It's just alarming. It's
a lot in my neck of the woods. I mean, yesterday alone.
To detail the three or four things that happened not far from you.
So I'll try to go off the top of my head here. I think I'll get them mostly correct. You had a couple pedophiles picked up across from the library there on Greelot.
I saw the story. I didn't know where it happened. Okay.
Very close to my home.
Family.
Yeah. Have the children that walk.
Yeah,
well, with us, but we're not letting them go alone. But we're close enough to walk to the library. So that happened across the street there from Greelot. But then yesterday, you had a shooting just up the street on Knollwood, like right where you, if you're headed towards 90 on Knollwood, right when you pass the park, just off to the right there. I think 15 law enforcement vehicles yesterday out there, crime scene tape, and
What shooting was that?
So you had one person who was killed and one person in serious condition, and I'm not sure exactly how they have ruled this. I'll tell you what the report said. So a woman is dead and a man critically injured, shooting late yesterday morning. Police said they responded to the Amberley subdivision off Knollwood Drive around noon. Found both victims with gunshot wounds at a home on Long Meadow Road.
Gosh.
Woman was pronounced dead at the scene. The man rushed to the hospital with life-threatening injuries. Then if you were to just take a little walk across that park and then head up Hillcrest a little bit, you'd be in the Cottage Hills subdivision. So right off Hillcrest near Cottage Hill.
Yeah.
And on Tuesday, you had a homeowner spot a burglar on their Ring camera. And then later Tuesday, neighbors detained the suspect just a few houses away, and multiple charges pending here for this person: burglary, drug possession, and possession of burglary tools. No arrest has been announced yet, but they had the person there in custody, it sounds like. So that's just within, I'd say, a mile of my house.
Yeah,
all of that going on.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that area was pristine 10 years ago, but you didn't have this at all. You never thought about it. We had that shooting in the McDonald's parking lot on a Sunday morning, of all things,
mm-hmm.
At Hillcrest.
Yeah, Hillcrest and Greelot. A couple years back.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's just, so you crime used to be more of numbers. You know, you would get statistics at some point in the year and say, well, crime is up or crime is down in Mobile, or here are the numbers. There's no waiting on the numbers anymore. The crime is, because the crime often happened in places that are,
never happened before.
And back then would happen in concentrated areas. And now that's no longer the case. You don't have to wait on the statistics come the end of the year. You already have an idea if crime is up or crime is down. It may not be the correct idea, but you have much more of a feeling.
Yeah, and so I think that's why it's still the leading, or at least one of the leading topics going into this mayoral race.
Yep.
And while numbers have gone down in some aspects, and we had some really high crime, especially during COVID, seems most of you are asking about just that issue, the crime and what you can do about it.
And you got two crime fighters, Batiste and Prine, and also a judge,
mm-hmm.
who are all
in the
among
mix.
Those running for mayor, yes.
That's right. Keep those questions for the mayoral candidates coming on the Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106.
From Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:35. One of the most hyped up announcements I can remember happened on Wednesday of this week. If I got that right, was it Tuesday? In the Rose Garden.
That was Wednesday.
And it didn't take long for reaction to that on Wall Street and otherwise. And Trump had that announcement right as Wall Street closed that day, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And then you saw the aftermarket trading, and then you saw what happened yesterday, pretty big dip, and then a big dip again
today.
This morning. Yeah,
yeah,
today.
Bill Ackerman, so he's a well-known investor, billionaire, so he knows what he's doing in money markets. And anyway, I thought it was interesting. So he comes out, and his I guess he's kind of now, has he joined the Trump team or is he a Trump backer?
Bill Ackman, he's been backing Trump. I'm not sure how long, but he was a pretty heavy backer here in this last campaign.
I thought he was. Yeah. But he one of those more recent former, I don't know if he was leftist, but I don't think he was ever a Trump guy. But he's one of these guys that come on board. And not a small name at all. He said here, my advice to foreign leaders is that if you have not already reached out to President Trump, you need to do so immediately. Trump is, at his core, a deal maker who sees the world as a series of transactions. He wrote that on a post on X, and he characterized the president as a tough but fair negotiator. He goes on to say he loves to make deals, and he loves to get things done promptly. So I think what we have now, whatever you're reading, it seems to be that you have countries that are fighting back a little bit, China, for sure. And China might have been the number one goal in all of this.
I think they
were.
To
get that straight, right?
Well, yeah. It's to tell China what's really up and how we're going to treat them during this Trump administration. But it was also telling all these other countries to quit screwing around with China and quit using the Chinese market
model.
Sending money to China hand over fist for these cheaper goods, just like we've been doing. So it's kind of a shot at them as well. Like, hey, we're about to probably go to war with China. And we've been talking about it for years. And all these years, it's been far off. And remember, it wasn't that long ago, they said, if China invades Taiwan, it's likely to come in 2025. And they were saying that like 5 years ago.
I remember that.
And it seemed like, oh, well, we have enough time to figure this out. But it's here. And they've circled Taiwan once again. And you have this big tariff off going on. And economic warfare, while it's not warfare, it's not that far from it.
It seems like one would lead to the other, right?
It seems that that's certainly possible,
so
yeah.
J.D. Vance was on Fox and Friends yesterday, and he says that Trump is simply shaking up something that has not been beneficial to the United States for a long time. I don't think you can really argue with that.
Especially the middle class. Now, the 1% have made a lot of money,
sure. So here's Vance on what he's trying to say.
President Trump is taking this economy in a different direction. He ran on that, he promised it, and now he's delivering. And yes, this is a big change. I'm not going to shy away from it, but we needed a big change. We cannot keep going down the Joe Biden globalist pathway where we have $2 trillion of peacetime debt and deficits.
So he admits it's a big change, since Americans are, you know, pretty panicked by all of this. You know, we get that. But he says we needed a big change. Something big had to happen. And so it happened. Now, where do we go from here? How do the parties negotiate? Again, Trump amazes me. You've got 180 different deals out there, basically, that need to be a referee.
And yesterday, he claimed every country was already calling him, trying to negotiate.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Sri Lanka's on line one, you know. Switzerland,
Madagascar on three.
Exactly. So here is Vance's advice, I guess you would say, for Americans that are feeling a little panicked by all of this.
What I'd ask folks to appreciate here is that we are not going to fix things overnight. Yeah. Joe Biden left us with the largest peacetime debt and deficit in the history of the United States of America, with sky-high interest rates. You don't fix that stuff overnight. We know people are struggling. We're fighting as quickly as we can to fix what was left to us, but it's not going to happen immediately. But we really do believe that if we pursue the right deregulation, we pursue those energy cost-reducing policies, yes, people are going to see it in their pocketbook. They're also going to benefit from the fact that foreign countries can't take advantage of us anymore. That means their jobs are going to be more secure.
I hope if you're a money manager, you've been good at, answering your phone the last couple of days, because I'm sure a lot of people are calling their money manager just saying, should I freak out? Are you freaking out? What are you hearing? They probably know more than us, you would guess. Maybe they don't know any more than us. And the other thing that was kind of comical, we were watching some clips of people on national TV throwing spitballs at each other, arguing about the whole thing. And it was like they're on, it might have been MSNBC. It's like they're talking to the nation, and they don't know much more than it seems
anyone else.
Anyone else.
Yeah.
And they're just, and they're just screaming at each other like two brothers in a fight on a basketball court. And it's like, dudes, you guys are like on TV right now. Do you realize that?
Something that Scott Bessent got destroyed for a couple days ago, and it may have even been a highlight from an interview from even further back, and someone asked him about the American dream. They said, you know, are you worried? I can't remember how the question was phrased, but it was basically, are all of these actions going to lead towards more people having the American dream? Or it may have been as simple as, what is the American dream? And he said, well, I'll tell you, the American dream isn't cheap flat screens. Like, those are nice, but that's not what's going to do best for the majority of the country.
No.
It's nice to have these cheap goods, but we all know, and I have a house full of cheap goods, and you wonder how you can have such a big TV at such a low cost. And then things start to break, and they break quickly. And it's, even though they're nice goods and they're cheap goods, they kind of are still cheap goods in many ways. But my main issue isn't, you know, how bad some of these products are, because like I said, my house is chock full of them. But when we say made American, made in America, that means other Americans have jobs and are building things.
True.
And when you don't have a manufacturing base, a wide manufacturing base, that brings on a whole host of other issues, including national security, which has been pointed out a lot here over these last couple of days. Someone jumped on Twitter and said, all of this just so that Americans can make a more expensive toaster. But that's twofold, okay? Those toasters will be made better, you would hope.
Yeah.
It would be like some of the, you know, there's fridges that still work perfectly fine that were built in the 1950s, made of great American quality material.
They're in a lot of garages around the country right now. That's the extra fridge.
So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect of onshoring jobs is it gives you the ability to scale up, just like we saw in World War II. And I'm not the first to point this out. Others pointed it out and brought my attention to it. But it makes sense that if you have a lot more people making toasters and ovens, those can be converted more quickly into building military equipment, just like we saw in World War II.
Yeah.
And well, we saw in COVID.
Mobile is a great example of that. And Alabama Village was a place where a lot of those people lived that's what they did.
Yeah. And so what you also have, though, with everything being made in China or elsewhere, we saw in COVID, our own medicine. Mm-hmm. If we had to truly lock the borders down for a war scenario, we wouldn't be able to. Not right now. People would start dying because they couldn't get their medicine or other necessary needs that are coming from other places because we offshored them. But the short-term pain is, first off, the major shift of the world's market, right? The financial markets.
Right.
But also, it takes time to rebuild a manufacturing base.
I agree. You can't snap your fingers and there's a toaster plant or whatever you're trying to build.
Yeah.
It's going to take time.
Yeah. And so I'm in the camp of, I don't know how this is going to go. I'm not a tariff expert. I do know that the same people who've been fine with offshoring these jobs for years and years and years seem to be the most angry about this. And they've been wrong about things before. So I'm just going to wait it out and see what happens. And I think a lot of people are probably in the same boat.
You're right in this age. So I think this is a fair question to you. When we think of the American dream, we generally think of the picket fence in the house and all of that. Is that still what a young family would think of as the American dream?
Yeah, and I think it might change generation by generation what the American dream is.
Has it changed? On the text line, let us know what you think.
But, yeah, and I think we've come back around to, and a big part of the youth movement towards Trump is because these younger generations, even younger than the millennial generation of which I'm part of, that dream has kind of circled back around to having a family and having children and a steady job and the ability to retire with time left to enjoy your life.
That's one big change right there. The ability to work for a firm or for a company long time, long term, get the watch and all of that, and feel the comfort and security all those years. That's gone.
It has gone away.
It's definitely. I mean, you should have seen how big and how you know, uncles that I had or people that would visit the house, friends of my father and mother, it wasn't, it was pretty common that they were in that sort of a job slash career, that they knew what they were going to be doing next week and they knew what they were going to be doing next year and they knew where they would retire from. That's, I don't think that's the case anymore.
Yeah, the American dream has kind of become hitting your dream, your plan is to hit the lottery in one way or another, whether it's the actual lottery or the athletic lottery where you end up going off to play in some sport, or the entertainer, you know, dream where, oh, I've become rich and famous. That almost seems like you don't have people or haven't for some time that go, I just want to lock down a steady job for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think these generations now are kind of coming back around to that and not needing to do the side hustles. Like, just find a job, not have to work two or three jobs and stay away from your family. Although my dad worked, you know, multiple jobs when he was coming up.
Doesn't this job feel like two or three jobs? A little bit.
You're trying to, during the Trump administration, it does, for sure. Trying to
and
cover all this.
Not just him, but, you know, it's, I mean, I love this job. I love doing it. I love that I'm here. I love that we have a relationship with our audience, and that's all great stuff, but
it never stops. 251-343-0106. That is the Mallory Piping text line. A rock and roll doctor says, what goods do we export to China? It certainly isn't cars. Well, it's a number of things, but I keep coming back to this conversation that Rick Pate had, the ag commissioner, a couple months ago, where he was talking about how our agriculture moves in the market. And because we don't have the manufacturing base we once had, but we still have the produce and the things that are necessary to make items like clothing, we grow a lot of it here and send it to China. And then they make whatever it is out of it and send it back, which doesn't, on its face, make a whole lot of financial sense. You already have the goods here, but you don't have the manufacturing base.
Right.
But the goods are going to come right back here to be bought. And in between is where that the value comes in when you purchase that product, is who's actually turning the potatoes into frozen little French fries, or who's, you know, turning the cotton into that shirt you're going to wear. So it's a big shift, but the farmers, the middleman in America, has been cut out of this after NAFTA, which is something I want to get to here if we have time.
Sure.
What Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were saying back then about tariffs and trade deals, and even Bernie Sanders just in 2008, his thoughts on tariffs, a complete 180 from what these same people are saying today.
Yeah. Well, we're going to hop in the political time capsule. I think you'll enjoy this. It is amazing what was said not that long ago by who and what their criticism is now.
And a lot of your texts to get to as well. We'll hammer through those. 251-343-0106.
Not sure how Jeff pulled this off, but wow. First hour of his show today. Coming up at 9 o'clock, U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville. Bottom of the hour, U.S. Senator Katie Britt.
Oh, back to back.
Yeah, on the Jeff Poor Show, minutes away. Dan and Dalton, good morning.
Mallory Piping text line, Uncle Jake, do we know where the money will go that the U.S. collects on tariffs? The way I understand it is into those government coffers to pay down the debt. That's the hope, anyway. Uncle Jake, sorry, I just asked Uncle Jake's question. And let's see, Mr. Doug, question for Mayors, which parts of the budget would you cut?
Nice.
Writing that one down. That's
like
a good
that.
One, Mr. Doug. That'll go on the question list. Squirrel Vereen, question for candidates. Will they have knee-jerk reactions to police officers having to confront crooks, like when Mayor Stimson pandered to left-wing protest types? I will ask, that's a good question. Will you have knee-jerk reactions to police enforcement? Bucky Beaver with a question here. You could probably imagine what the question will be about. Ask the candidates, what are they going to do about the onslaught against my community in Mobile County?
Oh.
The Beaver Lobby asking questions of the mayoral candidates.
I thought they were going to be asking, when is a Bucky's coming to Mobile?
Todd from Grand Bay, here's a question for all the candidates. What is their plan for the Mobile Bay River Bridge to have no tolls from the beginning? Good question there, Todd. And keep those coming. 251-343-0106. Michael with a very important question. When we play at Pickle Rage, are we more of a smasher or a dinker? Have you heard the Pickle Rage ads on the station? Yeah, it's opening soon. I'm excited about that, right up the street for me. Haven't done much pickleball, just a couple games, but I'm going to be way more invested once this indoor facility moves nearby. I told Michael, my move is I dink, and then smash.
Ah,
that's what I do in the pickleball.
They never saw it coming.
They never saw it coming. So I wanted to hit the time machine and look back at some of our favorite politicians and their thoughts on things like tariffs and China and trade.
Why not?
So why don't we hop into the political time machine, the time capsule here, and there it is. And we'll take you back to 1996. Nancy Pelosi, the longtime House Speaker, on tariffs and the trade deficit with China. Roll it.
How far does China have to go? How much more repression? How big a trade deficit and loss of jobs for the American worker? And how much more dangerous proliferation has to exist before members of this House of Representatives will say, I will not endorse the status quo? As I mentioned, it's about jobs, proliferation, and human rights. And there are those who say we shouldn't link human rights and trade and proliferation and trade. I disagree. But if we just want to take up this issue on the basis of economics alone, indeed, China should not receive most favored nation status for several reasons that I'd like to go into now. I'd like to call the attention
if you just started watching politics, they would have you believe Trump has the same some sort of fascination with charts.
Yeah.
The chart love has been going on for a very long time, even with Nancy Pelosi.
Chart on the status quo that the business community is asking each and every one of us to endorse.
So one of her quotes here, on this day, your member of Congress could have drawn the line to say to the President of the United States, do something about this U.S.-China trade relationship that is a job loser for the United States. Nancy Pelosi, 1996. We can go a little sooner and move forward this time.
29 years ago, man.
Political time capsule. Now we're going forward. This is 2008. Bernie Sanders. Free trade without tariffs will destroy American manufacturing.
So he's saying you got to have tariffs.
What they have said is that we need to not worry about manufacturing in America, because what we should establish is a policy of unfettered free trade. We don't need tariffs. What we need is to allow corporate America the freedom to throw American workers out on the street, people who are making 15, 20, 25 bucks an hour, health care, pensions, throw them out on the street, because somehow, Madam President, we are going to create wealth in America and good-paying jobs in America as we shut down plants, we move to China, corporations there pay workers 20, 30 cents an hour, and we bring the product back into this country. And anyone who goes shopping in a mall knows how difficult it is today to find the product made in America. But that is the philosophy, and I have to say in that regard, the champion, and he is honest on this one, Senator McCain has been criticized recently for not being the most honest candidate we have seen in terms of his ads and so forth. He has been honest on this one. He is the lead advocate of unfettered free trade.
So Bernie Sanders there saying the same kind of thing. And then quickly, Chuck Schumer. Well, we'll get to this one maybe next week. He explains the number one reason illegals come to the United States is so they can defraud programs like Social Security, and he wants it to stop. This is Chuck Schumer, 1996.
That is priceless.
Some of those videos being posted online yesterday. So whichever side of the political aisle you're on, when you hear these same people making these angry, and they'll have you believe 100% factual assessments of the situation where they stood on the same issues.
Go back
25, 30 years ago.
Yeah. And some cases sooner. You're right. Not that far away. I think Schumer will be an example of that. I cannot wait. 7:59, Dan and Dalton, and a very aggressive and active Jeff Poor is on the way next with some special guests.